In this episode of Movie Rollers, we're going to review the movies Oblivion, Disconnect, and Arthur Newman. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Good evening, all.
Very excited to talk about these movies
too.
This week.
Me too.
Yeah, well,
I've had to, like, poker face ever since we saw them.
Being Lady Gaga.
Mm-hmm.
I have 3 pages of notes for one of them.
Oh my God. Who writes 3 pages?
I couldn't stop.
I think you're going to have to publish them on the website.
You know, it's funny. Nobody writes anymore, but Yazdi.
I love it.
Old school.
He has books of it.
I'm all about Evernote with multiple devices syncing everywhere. I make notes on my iPhone, my iPad, my MacBook. Yazdi's got this notebook here, and it's great because the pages have gotten thicker with the ink, like,
yes,
the book is starting to bulge, beautifully written as well,
and it's beautifully written. There's nothing crossed out. I love Yazdi's writing.
I think we should take a photograph and put it on the website.
For me, it's just almost writing kind of solidifies my opinions,
and because then you commit,
and then I commit. It kind of helps
there's
me
no,
form
there's
a
no
full
delete
opinion.
Button,
and when I type, it seems not permanent enough. Somehow, for me, writing things down on a piece of paper helps. Maybe that's just my excuse about being old-fashioned.
I love it.
And I can't write anymore. I've noticed that I edit everything I write. So that's to your point, Yazdi. I think I'm very careless at the way I lay down my thoughts originally. And then I reorganize them and make them into a structure that I'm happy with. So I can't use pen and paper anymore.
I can write, but no one can read it.
Well, yeah, Rashmi's got...
No, you've got really small handwriting. You know, if the world runs out of paper, Rashmi will not have a problem. She can write an entire war and peace on a sheet of paper.
The challenge becomes in deciphering what's written after the fact. It's great that she's very efficient, but I get shopping lists sometimes from Rashmi, and it's got like Kabila bars. I'm like, what's a Kabila bar? And she said, no, that says toilet paper. I'm like, how does that say toilet paper? So, yes.
Hence, I type too.
Yes.
Which is funny because when I write on my blog, I just jump in and I start
how
typing.
Strange.
It's just the movie reviews. I think it helps me kind of process them.
It's like Yazdi's diary.
Yeah, I like it.
Yes.
I like it. Seeing as we've got 3 pages of notes,
yes,
we've had a start.
Yes.
So, I'm going to guess. Which movie do you think has 3 pages of notes? Disconnect, Oblivion, or Arthur Newman?
I think Disconnect.
I'm going to guess Arthur Newman, because I haven't seen that one. And I don't know that there's 3 pages to write about Oblivion or Disconnect, but that's...
Which one is it?
You want me to tell you, or should we reveal it? Rashmi was right.
Disconnect.
It's Disconnect.
Okay.
Okay, good.
All right, well, that can be our second review. That can be the midsection of the show. That can be our act two of
this
podcast.
There you go.
Let's kick off then with Oblivion.
Okay, so I kept the intro really, really short because I think the less you know about this movie going in, the better. So a veteran assigned to extract Earth's remaining resources begins to question what he knows about his mission and himself. This is directed by Joseph Kosinski, actually based on a comic book by Joseph Kosinski and Arvid Nelson, and writing credits by Joseph Kosinski and Carl, oh my gosh, I can't even pronounce this name, Gajusek? I've totally butchered the name, and Michael Arndt. This stars Tom Cruise, Morgan Freeman, Olga Kurylenko, and Andrea
Riseborough,
and Melissa Leo, who I didn't actually recognize in the movie, and some others.
Yet again, yes.
Okay, so Yazdi, you go first this time.
So some will complain that the story of Oblivion is too complicated. Some will complain that the story is too cerebral. Some will complain that the story does not have enough heft and that it meanders a lot. And I'm here to tell you they're all wrong. This is a great movie which understands that good sci-fi is not about aliens and spaceships. It is about ideas. This movie has a great idea, and it ups it by threefold better execution of the idea. It's a really beautifully made gorgeous to look at movie. It's messy, of course, and there are many things that are wrong about it, but there's so many things that are also right about it. I like the movie.
Joe.
Yay! I mean, yes, you obviously saw the movie a little bit more cerebrally than I did, because I think I just enjoyed the experience of being in this vision of Earth in the future. For me, this was all a little bit sci-fi babble, but it was really good sci-fi babble. You know, it had that kind of... It was almost like a friendlier, a more user-friendly version of Prometheus. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't trying to be as deep as Prometheus, but that whole feel, that very austere, very silent, you know, very character-driven sci-fi world was there for me. And I just loved the experience of being in this movie. The sound, we saw it in IMAX. The sound was glorious. The production design was just impeccable. And so I think the whole feeling that this movie had, the whole visual, the aesthetic, just totally tripped my trigger. I had a blast.
So time for the poker face mask to come off. It's difficult to do an original sci-fi movie in 2013 that isn't too gimmicky or based on a famous comic book. So when one comes along that's quite good, I'm going to love it. And I'm really happy to say I really enjoyed this movie too. And I was almost worried. What I was saying poker face was I knew that both of you loved Prometheus. And I was almost worried that this one was going to be a little bit too simple because you like Prometheus and I didn't like it as much. But I really, really enjoyed this movie. Good story, some good twists, and turns out with a really cool spaceship.
Oh, I mean, can I just say that production design gave me such a hard-on? I mean, by the time... I mean, I'm kidding.
I'm with you.
By the time the credits, the name of the movie comes on, my jaw was on the ground. I was like in hog heaven. I mean, it looked like a dirtied Apple version of the world.
Yes.
You know, everything was white and gleaming, but not quite. And I mean, somebody give an Oscar already for whoever designed the look of this film. I mean, there's that staircase, which looks like a DNA strand.
Everything.
There's that hovercraft.
Yeah.
You know, with that beautiful way in which it lands.
The drones
drones look so evil, they're mean. I mean, their eyes.
Yeah.
And then there is the slick space station, you know, with that whole the bottom of which is this, you know, clear underwater pool.
Where they live.
It's just a marvel of design. Yeah. And the sound editing is excellent.
The sound design in particular, I think, was one of my favorite things. I mean, the drones. So drones are these kind of satellite type spaceships that basically run around hunting aliens. That's the goal.
I mean, they're the modern day drone. Let's be honest. They're really, if you think about drones in war today,
but these are to being piloted. These are autonomous robot type things.
Right, they have the ability to think themselves as opposed to being piloted.
For me, they
yeah.
reminded me. Do you remember RoboCop?
Oh yeah.
They had ED-209, the big police machines that had that big hum. You know, that really powerful presence, and then, you know, when the guns that they have are like really powerful, bang, bang, bang. They don't fire. They bang. They explode and they pop. And these sounds were just unbelievable. I mean, you know, you said hard on. I'm going to say orgasm. The sound design gave me an orgasm. I was just in heaven every time the drone appeared. I was just like, wow, how do you do that? How do you make it feel
they
like
that? They
were
like sinister Pac-Man for me. They look like little Pac-Man that, you know, you imagine how Pac-Man would be in a three-dimensional world.
I mean, when you think about it, there are no bad guys in the movies. The bad guys in this movie are the machines. And you know, to make something so inanimate, so to make it so fully realized.
Yeah.
And this is a long movie, and, you know, you never once doubt what's going on. All those drones, they're so believable, and they're almost like characters of their own.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, again, let's talk about the acting. I mean, this is one movie where I didn't find Tom Cruise so overdone, and it didn't feel... I think this is why I give it props. This didn't feel like Mission Impossible in space. It felt like a different type of Tom Cruise and a different sort of movie, even though it was action-based.
I mean,
did you get that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Cruise, you know, say what you will, and I say a lot about his, you know, off-screen persona, whatever, but he's such a workhorse. you know, there is an old-fashioned, hard-working quality about him. He never seems to, you know, phone it in. He never seems to slum it. He's in the movie, and I agree, this is a different kind of Tom Cruise. But in many ways, this movie is so, it fits him so perfectly. Mm-hmm. I mean, the only thing I might say is, you know, he might seem too familiar because we've seen him for so long, but otherwise this is just the right role for
him. And he looks so good as a 50-year-old. He looks amazing.
50 years old. I know. It's just ridiculous.
I know. I've never heard you swear, Yazdi.
I mean, I was like, what the hell's going on? I know. What, does he drink, like, the blood of, you know...
young virgins.
Young virgins. Anyway, but he just works hard. I mean, he's in every scene of the movie.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's more of him in a single scene of the movie. And, you know, he just goes to bat. And he's a very agreeable screen presence.
Totally agree. And who was opposite him in this movie?
Andrea Riseborough
and Olga Kurylenko.
Who we'd just seen in the day before in Disconnect.
Yes.
Andrea Riseborough was also in Disconnect, yes.
As a journalist.
As a totally different character, yeah.
Unrecognizable, yeah.
Yeah.
What a great pairing, the two of them. I think she's kind of interchangeable for me with Emily Blunt. I think I could easily swap the two of them.
See, I got more of a Kate Winslet.
Yeah, I could see that too. The softer version of
Winslet. Yeah, a softer version of... In fact, I almost thought, is that Kate Winslet?
She held her own, and I think the chemistry between the two of them was appropriately good. I really enjoyed the performances. But I think a lot of the criticism of this movie has just come in for... it's very obviously influenced by many, many things. You know, there's the Stanley Kubrick influence, the 2001, the kind of austere thing. There's been parallels drawn with Predator because of the, you know, design of the aliens that are in the movie. You have, you know, the machines, subtext, and all this kind of stuff.
I see so many movies. Prometheus, Tron. Talked about Tron, which was directed by the same director.
That's right, yeah. Tron Legacy was the same director.
Alien, I see a little bit of Alien in terms of, you know, this whole hermetically sealed world where suddenly something is trying to break in.
Yeah.
Solaris, you know, this movie that Steven Soderbergh remade was about, you know, the spaceship lost and kind of starting to question what they're doing. Return of the Jedi. There's a whole scene, you know, which kind of reminded me of the Ewoks. You know, they're chased through the forest. You know, there's that whole scene where he's being followed by the drones, which reminded me of Return of the Jedi. So this movie has a lot of... Yeah,
see, I got The Island and Logan's Run. They were the two that came to my mind.
And The Matrix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not a bad group of movies to sit beside.
No, I don't still know why somehow you would knock a movie, because it's not derivative in the sense of it copies the ideas. I think it uses the ideas to create something new. And I don't think it's especially original, but it's definitely a fresh movie. Yeah, that's a good word.
I do have one criticism, so you've got to indulge me. So my criticism is around the fact that we're in the future, okay, we're like, how many years in the future now? And we're in this kind of dirty apple world. I think I like the way you described that, Yazdi. And you can wear whatever you want, okay? But the character that he lives with, Victoria, she chooses to wear high pumps and a Calvin Klein sheath dress. Okay? I was like, really? That's your costume every day?
But that's okay. Like a woman in the future to wear, Rashmi?
I don't know, but I wouldn't imagine it to be a sheath
dress. Anthropology is closed by then.
No, I totally saw her wardrobe as part of her character.
Yeah,
she's this tightly wound, very polished, follow the rules kind of person.
Yeah, but I just thought, wow, they're still making pumps and sheath dresses, you know, into the future. It took me out of the...
They're comfortable.
Have you worn a sheath dress or high pumps? No.
I don't have that figure. I would not look good or feel comfortable in one of those, but if I had her hourglass figure, I would probably be happy wearing a sheath dress.
And then removing it ever so softly as you jump in naked into a clear pool at the bottom of a space station.
Okay, I think we're going back to the intro somehow here. Okay, but then my other criticism was that if you've been in Delta Sleep for 60 years, okay, you've been out in the cosmos, you've been sleeping for 60 years, you cannot wake up with perfect makeup and perfect hair. I go to sleep for less than 6 hours and I don't look like that. That's it. That was my indulgent criticism of the movie.
Wow. Okay. So Rashmi derailed the review as normal. Yasli, you were going to make a point. That was a sensible point.
No, I mean, I was talking about the Victoria character. I really liked that character because And maybe it's the actor, maybe it's this Andrea Riseborough who's, you know, now really wowed me, especially in this movie. Her reactions are so precise that, and she brings such an emotional ballast to everything. I mean, she brings jealousy and she brings...
Without being over the top,
because there isn't much she actually speaks, but, you know, her reactions are so good that actually when I was walking out of the movie, I was thinking, well, you know, wouldn't it be nice if the movie was actually about her? And, you know, considering that, you know, she was one of the minor characters, I thought it was commendable, you know. I really, that character has really stayed with me.
Yeah, me too. I think she's probably one of the most memorable characters in the film, actually. Yeah.
Did anyone notice that it was Oscar-winning cinematographer Claudio Miranda?
From The Life of Pi.
Life of Pi. He's the same director of photography as Life of Pi. Mm. And it shows. Yeah. I mean, this guy really knows what he's doing with a camera.
And talk about versatility.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he does Life of Pi and then he does this full sci-fi...
CG extravaganza. But yeah. I mean, he knows how to compose a shot.
Yeah. And even within the film, I think that there's a huge amount of breadth in terms of, you know, from a spaceship and a space world to some lush... You know, it's some like lush foliage, yeah, thing. The desert, I mean, the ocean, we see a lot. Yeah, that's a great point. Okay, I'm ready to wind this one up. Anything more to say?
No.
Okay, Joe, why don't you go first?
So, I mean, this was visually striking. I loved everything about the way that this movie felt while I was in it. Really the most immersive experience I've had since Prometheus. And I completely forgot that this movie wasn't 3D. This is a great advertisement for why one does not need 3D to create an immersive, visually striking world. So my only criticism really is that the story did lose its way a little bit towards the end, but I didn't really care. I was so involved with what was going on. So in summary, I'm going to describe this as kind of a more action-oriented, less cerebral version of Prometheus. And for that, I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10. Loved it. Really loved this movie. I want to see it again. In the movie
in IMAX,
theater.
In proper IMAX.
In IMAX.
I did see it again.
You did?
I did.
You in swine.
IMAX? No, I didn't see it in IMAX. Oh. But I saw it at the Arclight in a big screen, on a widescreen.
And?
Oh, I loved it. Absolutely love it. And there were little things that I didn't catch the first time, like the fact that Morgan Freeman.
We didn't even talk about Morgan Freeman.
Wears a cod piece. Did you realize that?
He's wearing this.
It was like, really? I didn't notice that the first time. It was very weird. Morgan Freeman finally gets to wear a cod piece. He can tick it off his bucket list.
And a set of Morpheus glasses from The Matrix. That's a little derivative there.
But it's fun. Yeah, it was fun. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I keep saying this. I mean, I'm a sucker for ambitious movies, even if they're messy. This one is not particularly messy, but it has ambition to spare. I love the idea of the movie. I loved the plot of the movie. I loved the very actually old-fashioned moral that it's pushing and in the background. And I was just completely taken over by the look of the film. So I think the movie is successful at several levels. I think if you're the kind of person who cannot stand Tom Cruise, and I used to be one of those several years ago, if you're the kind of person, please don't let that stop you from seeing this movie. Go see this on as wide and as big and as IMAX of a screen as you can. You're in for a treat. You know, it's a short, zippy 2-hour film. You owe yourself, you know, a chance to see it. It might be one of the better visual experiences of the year. I give it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. And we didn't even mention Melissa Leo.
Yes.
Who was very good in this movie. So even if you're not a sci-fi fan, and I'll do it from the very, very girly point of view, ultimately, once you get past the sci-fi and the spaceships and the strange beings and the technology, this is an Armageddon love story. And who doesn't like a good old-fashioned love story? I really enjoyed this movie. I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10 as well.
Yeah.
Good stuff. I'm really, really glad you liked it, because I was worried. Because I can see why people might have a hard time with it. It's even though I said it's more action-oriented than Prometheus, it's still a very slow movie.
Oh, there are parts of the movie where it just completely slows down and there are people talking for 5 minutes. And actually, the second time when I saw it, I noticed some people were getting restless in those parts. Mm-hmm. And so I worried that, you know, people might not have, you know, sustained interest in it. But you know, I never had that
it
problem.
It really keeps you guessing. I never found myself being able to predict the end. And I never found myself even wanting to predict the end. Like, I was just enjoying it in the moment. And that's rare for me. Because I always want to get to the end.
Yeah. And I don't think I even fully understood the story the first time. I did not. And, you know, it was when I saw the second time that certain connections happened. It's pretty smart even how the last few scenes are edited. It's, you know, there's a piece which happens 60 years ago and what's happening right now, and it's intercut back and forth, and that's done pretty cleverly.
It came apart a little bit for me at the end, but I didn't really care. And the cat's trying to get on the podcast by rubbing Yazdi's microphone again.
And she's going to sit on his notes again.
That's okay.
Let me just move her.
She has as much of a right to be here, more so than I do. Anyway.
She loves Yazdi and she loves his notes.
All right. Well, let's move on to our second movie of the week then, and that is Disconnect.
So I'll do the intro to that. Henry Alex Rubin, the director of arguably one of the best documentaries ever made, Murderball, makes his fictional film debut with Disconnect, a movie about a set of disparate characters whose stories sometimes intersect. These are characters who are all affected by their attempts at all manner of forms of modern communications, be it through social media, online interactions, or computer-based video communications. How wired have we become as members of the modern urban jet set? One story involves an eager young journalist who befriends an underage boy who works at a video sex site with the hopes of getting an investigative scoop. Another story sees a couple drifting apart following the death of their little boy as both husband and wife reach at online connections to help deal with the tragedy in their own way. And the last story involves a shy high school teenage boy who becomes the victim of a particularly cruel joke played by two of his more popular classmates who pretend to be a girl online who is interested in the boy. The film is written by Andrew Stern and stars Jason Bateman, Paula Patton, Hope Davis, Andrea Riseborough, Max Thero, Alexander Sarsgaard, Jonah Bobo, and Frank Gallo. So should viewers connect with Disconnect? What do you guys think?
This is one of the most enjoyable films I've seen all year, and not preachy at all in its ability to show the impacts of sexting, chat rooms, and internet porn, and gambling, or another Saturday night in our house. No, I'm just kidding. I really, really like this film. I think it was really, really enjoyable.
Joe?
Yeah, this movie, I mean, I'll start right off by saying I really enjoyed it, but I think it's very much a sign of the times movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it's issues that are very current. And so I found myself almost cringing with how close to the bone it was in depicting many kind of circumstances and situations that are really just the fact that we live in this very online connected world. So I think it did that very well. It was a little too reminiscent of the movie Crash, which I'm a huge fan of. And so I felt that it borrowed a little too heavily from the way that that movie was assembled. But that's not a bad thing, right? I mean, if you're going to borrow something, then borrow from a work of greatness. And so the way that it interweaved these various stories and kind of cut back between the several narratives was nicely done. I had a really good time watching this film.
So for me, there is no other way to say it. I think the film is flat out brilliant. I mean, it is easily the best film of the year I've seen to date. And I've seen some pretty good movies so far. And it may prevail as the year marches on. And I was thinking, you know, why did I have such a strong positive opinion about this movie? I mean, we've seen other very accomplished movies, including the one we just discussed. I think it's because at the halfway point during the movie, I forgot I was watching a film, you know. I forgot I was meant to evaluate this film. I was in the film and I was breathing it and feeling it. And when this happens, this involuntary reaction, I have a lot of gratitude for films that just wrestle me and take me over. And the movie just took me over. And I, you know, when that happens, it's outside my control and I'm grateful for it. I just think this movie is so good at so many levels.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you. I mean, I think this is a thriller of sorts. And Joe, you said it, you know, the fact that it brings together many different characters and three distinct stories in some way, you know, is very reminiscent of films like Babel and Crash. But I think it did it really, really well. I think the thing for me that kind of swung it from being a better than average film to a really good film was, it's not overplayed, and it displayed a lot of restraint in the way that it's put together. The tension was so incredible throughout the movie. I was literally on the edge of my seat, and I had that sick feeling in my stomach. And I think that sick feeling in my stomach had something to do with the fact that, like you said, a lot of it is about the world we live in now. It's very raw, and it was almost uncomfortable to watch at times. But I thought that the thing that blew me away was the really clever use of the screen and the dialogue during the periods when we're on the internet. That was really beautiful to watch.
Just describe that.
So basically, whenever someone's on the internet engaging texting, with someone or texting or using some form of electronic communication, you see the character's face doing the work. But the actual text that's being exchanged between two people is being typed on the side of the screen. And the dialogue was really real. I mean, it didn't feel, Yazdi, to your point, it didn't feel like we were watching a made-up movie. It felt like at times we were watching almost like a documentary, but in a good way.
Yeah, I just lost perception of where I was. I didn't even realize I was watching a documentary. I was just in the movie. And I think we've talked about this before. I think the very best movies are those which have this perfect trifecta of excellent script, excellent direction, and excellent acting. And I think this movie achieves all three of those. And I think, you know, I mean, I've been reading some of the reviews because I had such a strong reaction to it. And, you know, some of them have been somewhat negative. And I think some people find the film overcooked. Some find it predictable. Some find it coarse. Some find it very obvious. And I can't argue with how others respond to the movie. I can only tell you about my own reaction. And when you're in that cinema seat, you feel what you feel. And this movie just had a great emotional wallop for me. I mean, there were a couple scenes towards the end which just really shook me.
And sometimes you don't think they're going to go there, and they go there. That was the other thing. It crossed boundaries, but I like how it didn't shy away from going there.
Yeah. And I think with this kind of material, it's so easy for the movie to be kind of a shrill diatribe, judgmental about people, you know, who choose to connect electronically. It's so easy to say, oh, it's all the, you know, the perverts and the pathologically damaged people who are lurking around at all these websites and trying to connect, and they're all losers. It would be so easy to do that. But I think this is one of the first movies which kind of brings home the point that very often this form of electronic communication can provide a salve, a kind of soothing to people who
support.
Are going, support We're to not, people who are going through a bad experience. And somebody in your own family may not empathize with that. And the only person who's going to empathize is somebody else who's going through the same situation. And they might be a stranger, but they're the only ones who can comfort you. And that's what electronic communication provides right now.
Right. I mean, I think it was all very relatable. I mean, even, you know, even the story about the journalist and, you know, the boy that strips, you know, you don't necessarily have to have been part of that to understand what it is that drives these people, the world in which they inhabit. And I think it did that very well. I think for me, the reason that perhaps I'm not responding to the movie as strongly as the two of you did is, you know, I just kept thinking about Crash all the way through, but B, there was one storyline which didn't work for me, and that was the Alexander Skarsgård aspect.
Patton,
Now the Paula Patton bit worked brilliantly. She was great. I understood, and that's the bit that you've been describing right now. But the Alexander Skarsgård, the way that he behaved to the way that his character reacted to the things that were happening around him, did disconnect me from the film. I didn't buy that. And that one little chunk is probably the only bit of the movie that I didn't buy. And so I had a little bit of a hard time. But that's kind of a nitpick. I'm not going to, you know, give the movie too hard a time for that.
I do want to talk about both the direction as well as the acting. And I certainly resonated more with some characters than others.
Yeah.
But in terms of the direction, I think most movies, even very accomplished ones, they start off really well and they build a premise, and then they kind of, you know, peter out in the last act, just trying to, you know, hit the corner and get to the finish line. But I think this movie really gathers steam in its last act, and that's where it really builds power. And I think that's a credit to the director, because, you know, I kept waiting for a stumble. I kept saying, you know, there's going to be something contrived. There's going to be something maudlin, that the end is going to be something really predictable and expected, and that this character is going to do what, do that. And I didn't see a single misstep. And again, a lot of the reviewers have a complaint about how the movie ends. And, yeah. and I know because they wanted a certain kind of payoff that yeah. the director does not give them. And that would have been a total cop-out. That would have been so predictable to have that payoff. And I'm so glad that they exercised restraint and didn't go there.
I mean, this is the telltale sign for me. The film is so engaging that there was actually pin drop silence. I don't know if you both noticed, but there was pin drop silence in the theater, which I haven't experienced in a long time. And literally, at times when certain things happened, there were gasps in the audience. I mean, that's how engaging it was. I have not had that experience in such a long time. We always complain about people talking or eating their popcorn or making way too much noise. Don't do that, by the way, if you're listening. But this was incredible. I mean, this is how engaging it was.
Yeah. And there isn't one, you know, overdone or silly or weak performance. I mean, you know, Jason Bateman, I don't think ever been so good.
No, he was. I agree with you there. Unbelievable. Like, I know this is not going to happen, but that was an Oscar performance.
Oh, I would put him up for a Best Supporting Actor.
He was amazing.
Easily. He was so good. And Paula Patton's character could be so mopey and silly and just one-dimensional, but she brought such a warmth and believability. Yeah. And I really felt sad for her.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you expect these from the accomplished actors, but I think it's the younger actors who were just really particularly commendable.
And even the guy who plays Jason Bateman's son, my God, he blew me away.
Jonah Bobo.
Yeah, what a great last name.
Yeah. And I want to say one other thing, you know.
As he turns to page three of his notes.
As I turn to page three of my notes.
I was hoping it wasn't two.
Is, you know, the movie uses the most tired of cinematic conventions, that of the slow motion. And it uses it only sparingly in one scene towards the end of the movie. And it's just about the perfect use of slow motion I've seen, when all three of the stories kind of intersect and these images are playing out and it's done in slow motion.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys,
but it was so good.
I was outside of my own skin. I couldn't wait for the film to be fast forwarded, because I couldn't bear to see what was happening in slow motion.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, and Joe, you know, yes, you know, I've been like, and the other thing, and
it's all right, I'll let you guys talk.
This is the other thing that really impressed me about the movie. It's a dark movie for the most part, but despite how dark it is, there are appropriate moments of humor and relief that are really, really well placed. Like, just when you're getting to the, oh my God, I can't take this anymore. A really nice little bit of appropriate humor that just allows you to breathe for a second before it takes you on the next ride, you know.
Yeah.
So good. I could go on and on. This is so good.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on.
Okay. So, Yazdi, why don't you wind this one up and score?
So, I didn't know anything about this movie when I walked in, but, you know, this film is the reason I'm so critical of other films that settle so easily for being mediocre. I mean, with all its interconnected stories, it reminds me of Crash. And I think, for me personally, it might even be better than Crash. But I'm not going to go in that territory. And I think there is not a thing wrong with this film. It gets everything right. And I think this movie is the reason why any of us bothers to head into the darkness of cinema halls. It completely devastated me. It's brilliant. It's the best movie I've seen so far this year. And that says a lot. It gets a very easy 9 out of 10. Very easy. It's so accomplished. You owe yourself.
You can tell when Yazdi loves a movie. There's no halves.
Yeah.
He's like, easy. Bang on.
Solid.
It's easy 9 out of 10.
Yeah. Joe.
So, I mean, everything you said about this movie is true. I would argue that for me, it was just a little overcooked. You know, they could have taken it out 2 minutes earlier when the toothpick pulled out clean, as opposed to now, where things had just gotten a little dry for me. So I think it was just ever so slightly overdone, but that's not to say this isn't a movie worth watching. I mean, it's definitely one of the best movies. It's easily in my top five of the year so far. And, you know, we've seen a lot of movies. So I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10. I think it would have been bumped up by one of the stories being just a little tighter, but it was extremely well written, directed, and acted. And just a big thumbs up.
Yeah, I'm going to echo what you said. This is a really good movie that shows what people do with technology versus what technology does to them. I think that's a key point.
Well said.
This may not get universal love. And actually, the man in the elevator behind us said, this was so bad, there wasn't even an ending. To which I reply, this was so good, this isn't going to give you the ending you expect.
Exactly.
An easy one to connect with. An easy peasy 9 out of 10. Favorite movie of the year so far.
Yeah. It's cuttingly real in terms of how it depicts technology. I mean, I think it's such a sign of the times movie. I wonder how we'll view it in 10 years' time, because it's all about the Facebook world, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, all of us right now are on Facebook. We all communicate in this way, and, you know, there's these social networks. And what a great... Satire is the wrong word, but it's a really good observational piece mm-hmm. about the world as it is in 2013.
Yeah, and I think it's easy, again, you know, I think it's easy to think this is about technology, but I think it uses technology as a vehicle to show people and people's lives, and the mishaps in people's lives are just, that's what came across to me, is how real these people's lives were. It wasn't sugar-coated. It felt like we were really like flies on the wall.
Yeah, and not to repeat myself, but I think this is, again, the first movie which really, to me, made it very clear why people connect with strangers online. Mm-hmm. You know, why? I mean, it's not because you're some crazy person. It's, you know, it brings that point across very well.
Yeah. So you haven't seen You've Got Mail?
That's a really good end to the podcast, Joe. Thanks.
Yes. No, sorry, carry on.
No.
That's it.
All right. Well, no, Arthur Newman.
Yes.
No, I was saying, like, that's it. You've killed the vibe.
Oh,
you disconnected us.
Bloop. All right.
Okay, Arthur Newman. A story. I'm really intrigued by this one, by the way, and I really wanted to watch it, so I'm sad we missed the screening. A story of a man who fakes his own death and assumes a new identity in order to escape his life, who then moves in with a woman who is also trying to leave her past behind. This is directed by Dante Ariola, and written by Becky Johnston. And stars Emily Blunt, Colin Firth, and Anne Hesh, amongst others. And Yazdi, you're the only one of us who saw this. And I remember you talking about this after Toronto Film Festival. It wasn't in our frontal lobe at that time. It is now. So give us the full Moviewala treatment.
Yes, I think if the idea of a film with Colin Firth and Emily Blunt excites you, and it should.
It does.
Then I think it's almost impossible to talk about this movie without giving away key plot elements. So, I don't know, I guess consider yourselves, you know, warned about spoiler alert. I mean, you mentioned it in the summary of your movie, but I think the movie it reminded me most of was Lost in Translation.
Mm.
In that it kind of evokes this undefinable, tenuous connection between two strangers. It's sort of like a Lost in Translation set in small-town Southern America.
I already want to see it.
Yeah, I do too. I know, so I was going to say, that's one of your favorite movies, Joe.
It's one of my Desert Island discs.
But in many ways, it has an even more melancholic tone, if that's possible. So overall, the movie was a bit of a downer for me, because it's so incredibly dark. And, you know, I was worried how they will sell this movie. It's a very hard sell. And I've been watching some of the previews, and it's been led to seem like a movie which is sort of this romantic comedy.
It's billed as a romantic comedy.
And it's so not a romantic comedy. But I like that it is about two people who have no reason to be together, who land up being together, and how they land up helping each other in a way. I mean, I have had days in my life when I felt like, and not too many, thank God, but I've had days in my life where I felt like, wouldn't it be nice if I just completely walked out of my life, took up a new identity, settled somewhere else, not be accountable to anyone, and start being, you know, starting afresh with completely new identity. And that's the basis of this movie, is that the Colin Firth character takes on a new name, Arthur Newman, and, you know, he takes off. And I think the movie takes a really long time in giving the details about these characters. So it might try the patience of people who are frustrated about getting to know more about these characters. But I really identified with that aspect of the movie, that what would drive a person that they would actually do something like that. And the movie kind of touches on that. It has moments of good humor. The other piece which I was really disappointed with is, you know, like the two of you, I'm a huge, huge fan of Emily Blunt.
And Colin Firth.
But Emily Blunt in particular, it seems like a crime to deliberately dim, you know, the charms of an actor as adorable as Emily Blunt. And she plays a broken, tattered character here. I mean, she's really broken down character. And props to her. She completely makes it believable. But, you know, I don't think I'm ready to watch Emily Blunt as a broken character in any movie. So it just took me, you know, some getting used to.
So on the Tomatometer, it's been panned now. Granted, there aren't many reviews of this because it's literally just been screened this week, I think, other than those who were lucky enough to see it at the film festivals. But it's at 29%. Yeah. That seems low, and it seems... is that an unfair score, do you think?
No, I came out really miserable. I came out feeling very miserable.
Oh.
And it's got a really dark, despondent, we're all going to die kind of feeling through most of it. So I can understand that. And I think the other piece, which the person I saw it with was very frustrated because, you know, she said that I didn't find out anything about these characters until like the last half hour of the movie. The first 2 hours, I was like, who are these people? Why should I care about them? You know, why is he acting so strange? So it holds its cards so close to its chest through most of its running time
that it forgets it's a movie, right?
Yeah, it might frustrate some people.
I mean, it sounds a little bit Salmon Fishing in Yemen. Esque. Is it similar to that? I mean, I only say that because it's got, you know, Colin Emily Firth. Blunt and...
Yeah,
instead of Ewan McGregor, it's McGregor-ish. Got like the Colin Firth character.
I think it's a completely different tone. Okay. I mean, I think of delight and a smile comes on my face when I think of Salmon Fishing in the Yemen. This movie, there are scenes in there which are humorous, but it's pretty dark for the most part.
Hmm.
I mean, it's a brave choice to make a movie that is so... despondent, so sad, you know, but good for them.
It's interesting because genres on at least on Rotten Tomatoes is romance, comedy, and drama. So it's odd to me that a movie that is that you're saying is so dark.
Maybe the two of you should comedy. See. Yeah, maybe the two of you should see it. It was like the fifth movie I saw that day, so maybe I was the one who was despondent and dark.
It's an interesting choice for someone like Colin Firth when, you know, he got so much acclaim for The King's Speech. And I mean, I'm just looking at the IMDb now, and, you know, ever since then, he's really only done Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, which was a... I enjoyed that movie. I know some people didn't, but it seems a strange choice. He seems to have made really good choices. This doesn't seem like it maybe played out how it was supposed to.
I mean, the whole movie is a character study about his character.
Right. And we've seen him do that so well in A Single Man.
Yes.
Where he was exceptional.
Yeah. And, you know, he's got the accent down perfectly.
So are they English? That was my question. Are they English?
No, it's set in small towns, you know, southern part of America. So, no, it's an American.
Weird, isn't it? Because both of Emily Blunt and
They're both British.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, well, wrap this one up and score it for us then.
So I think this is, this is definitely not a Friday night movie. There's nothing delightful or fun about it. but it's an exceptionally true to the bone character study of a person going through a huge crisis in life and trying to reinvent himself. It's about broken characters. So I think for me personally, it was a bit of a disappointment because I wanted it to kind of come off on the other side with even the slightest bit of hope, and it does not. So I would give it overall somewhere between a 6 and a 7 out of 10. Just for the acting, maybe 7 out of 10. And Anne Heche, by the way, is very good as well. Yeah. Mm.
She's consistently good.
Yeah, she's been doing good work in recent years.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Let's wrap up then for today. Mail at movierollers.com for comments. Twitter.com/movierollers. Facebook.com/movierollers as well. Until our next episode, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well. Go see Disconnect.
And Oblivion.
Yes.
Two good movies in a week. That's a treat.
Yeah.